Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Ed Chu and Ken Miller. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center, and Dr. Miller is a medical oncologist specializing in pain and palliative care, and he serves as the Director of the Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Clinic. If you'd like to join the discussion, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, Dr. Miller speaks with Dr. Fred Akuku. Dr. Akuku is a fellow in oncology and a medical resident in medicine at Makerere University in Uganda.
Fred, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you, Ken.
Tell us about yourself. Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in the eastern part of Uganda, which is in East Africa. I know many Americans have not been to Africa, so it's good to know that Uganda is one of those countries in eastern Africa. And I currently live in Kampala, and this is the main city of Uganda. And this is where I've been living most of my time.
Now, I want to ask you about Kampala. I had the pleasure of being there last summer. But just, again, for the audience, is that the size of New Haven or Hartford, or is it a bigger city?
Kampala is a much smaller city sorry to say this, but really many potholes and many people moving on the streets.
Yeah.
But with many smiles as well.
You know what? Actually, I have to say, very well said, because I found that the people were incredibly friendly and lovely people. When Americans think of Uganda, you know, unfortunately, we tend to think of Idi Amin, you know, and in the movie The Last King of Scotland. But, I mean, is your country at peace now?
Well, Uganda has had many challenges. It was Idi Amin, then it was the HIV, and then recently there has been this war going on in the north. I think many people have watched the war dance, mm-hmm. basically depicting of what has been going on. But I should say that there is relative peace in Uganda. And actually, you can access all parts of the country without having much trouble. You won't have any problems in Kampala. It's pretty much safe. You can move late, and it's a good city.
Yeah, I have to. You know, and I found it that way also. Very, very safe, and again, just wonderful people. Fred, let's talk a little bit before we start talking about cancer in Uganda. I think your country has done an amazing job with HIV. So, could you share with us? I mean, what was the incidence, and what was done, and what's the incidence of HIV now?
A few years ago, about 10 years ago, the incidence of HIV in Uganda was 30%, and there was this aggressive program by the government. The government was open about this HIV problem, and we got lots of help from friends abroad. And there was this strategy of ABC, which has been commended on Uganda by all the other international community.
Now I want to ask you, because you just said something very important. What does ABC mean?
Abstinence is being faithful and using a condom.
Okay.
That's the ABC strategy.
So A is abstinence, B is to be faithful,
yeah.
And C is condoms or protection.
Great.
Okay. And with that active, aggressive work that the government's done, where are things now with HIV?
We're now talking about 6-7%, and this has been for the last about 5-10 years, and which is a commendable job, and the government is trying to keep that to that level and even bring it lower. There's a lot of strategy in the young people in the primary schools and targeting the high-risk groups, and it seems to be working quite well.
So let me ask you, with the decrease in the number of people with HIV and people dying of complications of HIV, what's happening in terms of cancer?
Kaposi sarcoma is the biggest killer. It's the biggest cause of death among cancer patients in Uganda. And among men, it's the number one cancer, and among women as well.
Now, let me, for the audience, can you tell us what is Kaposi sarcoma?
Kaposi sarcoma is And this is the epidemic type. There are many types, but we're talking about the epidemic type that is associated with HIV. Mm-hmm. In other words, when you have HIV, your chances of developing Kaposi sarcoma is about 20,000-fold. And that study was done here in the U.S. And so it is associated with this virus, the herpes HHV-8 virus, which is also known as the Kaposi sarcoma virus. And so many HIV patients and also many studies done in Uganda show that the prevalence of the HHV-8 virus is between 70 to 100%.
And that's in people that have HIV.
Exactly.
So you're saying a number of people with HIV also have this virus.
Yes.
And then some of them go on to develop the Kaposi sarcoma.
Yes.
What are some of the other common cancers, let's say in men, for example?
In men, we have Kaposi sarcoma, and then we have cancer of the prostate, and then we have esophageal cancer. These are the three main cancers among the men.
And in women?
In women, the commonest is cervical cancer, and somehow the cervical cancer in Uganda is not associated with HIV, and this is something that is being studied. And we have cancer of the breast, which is quite common. And then we also have the Kaposi sarcoma, the epidemic type, which is quite common.
So both in men and women, there are a lot of people with Kaposi sarcoma.
And by and large, if you placed Kaposi sarcoma and Burkitt's lymphoma, these two form the bulk of cancers in Uganda. Burkitt's lymphoma was first described in Uganda in the 1960s, and Dennis Burkitt, a surgeon who was working in East Africa, first described this. It's about 40 years since he did that. And this is very common. Every year, the Cancer Institute in Uganda sees about 150 to 160 children with Burkitt's lymphoma, which is very different from what you see in the U.S. Our Burkitt's lymphoma is the jaw type, and even the staging is oriented towards the jaw. So it's quite different from what you see.
Now, I remember when I was in Kampala, there was one of your wards, one of your buildings was primarily children with Burkitt's lymphoma with swelling of the jaw. That has been a tremendous success story. The work that was done at the Cancer Institute. Can you tell? I don't think you were practicing 40 years ago.
No,
but what happened?
So that center you saw was actually named after, in respect to the work done by Dennis Burkitt, and it's called the Lymphoma Treatment Center, the LTC. And here we have more than half of the children there actually have Burkitt's lymphoma. And I must report that we've done some remarkable work, and 86% of the kids that come over with Burkitt's lymphoma go in remission. In other words, the cancer totally disappears. We have about 1% that is still a challenge, and we also lose many patients to follow up. But we must say that we still use the old combination of COM, this is Cytoxin, Oncovir, and Methotrexate, which was developed 40 years ago, and we're still seeing success with the same regimen.
Which I have to say is amazing that really 40 years ago, those three drugs were put together. They worked incredibly well. And I have to say, for the rest of the world, really taught us some lessons about using combinations.
Yeah, exactly. And as you know, we are not able to do many genomics of this tumor. We cannot type. We cannot do the cytometry. But we just depend on the H&E stain. That's the basic stain that was used many years ago, and this is what our pathologists still use. We think that the 1% tumor that does not respond is probably has different genomics, which probably requires different treatment like Rituxan, and so this is one of the challenges we're facing.
Fred, talking about challenges, let's talk about adults now. Let's say an adult with a different type of cancer. If you, as the physician, feel the patient needs chemotherapy, what happens? In terms of do you administer it? Do you write a prescription?
Our healthcare is still government-based, and one of the challenges, the government cannot keep up with the numbers, the growing population. And so we have a patient supplementing and buying the drugs. And so when I see a patient, I do the prescription, and the patient goes to the stores to buy the drug. And many of our patients cannot afford this. As a matter of fact, many of our patients come late in the advanced stages. For example, cancer of the breast, 95% come in the advanced stage. Only 5% come in stage 1 and 2. And this is a big challenge.
You know, and I think you and I have talked about that here in the United States. Thankfully now it's about 85% of our patients come with early stage breast cancer. So it is a huge challenge that you face. So, in your country, if people don't have funds to buy chemotherapy, now at this point, what happens?
Recently, about 10 years ago, we had hospice come on board, and this has been very helpful because we cannot treat many of our patients, and so we basically palliating them.
Yeah.
And so we have hospice in the different parts of the country, and they help out, control the pain so that people die peacefully, and this is a big challenge. Probably where we are is where this country was many years ago, and it's a big challenge.
And I know there's tremendous efforts being made in your country to diagnose cancers earlier.
It's great. Recently, we had many people visiting over, and Ken, you visited last summer, and it was very wonderful. And it's great because this van that you are bringing over, the Mamu van, is going to do a lot of help to us. If we cannot treat these cancers, it's expensive for us to treat the cancers. The patients cannot afford the treatment. We do not have insurance like you do have here. The best way would be to catch the cancer early, and probably this van would be very helpful to go down to the villages. Many of our people use the traditional medicine, and this is a challenge because they come over very late. And in Uganda, as it is in other African countries, many people first take the traditional herbs, and by the time they come to hospital, the cancer is advanced. So we are hoping that this van will help us in our screening program that is beginning. We will go out to the villages, we'll go out to the schools and encourage people to come early to screen for cancer, teach them about BSE, breast self-exam, mm-hmm. and encourage them to come over to the Cancer Institute, because this is a program that is beginning and we want to screen as many women as possible.
I have to say, it would be fantastic to be able to find cancers earlier and hopefully with a much higher success rate. Well, I'd like to remind you in our listening audience, please send any questions that you have by email to canceranswers@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute, and then please stay tuned to learn more about cancer care in Uganda with Dr. Fred Akuku.
Over 170,000 Americans will be diagnosed with lung cancer this year, and more than 85% of these diagnoses are related to smoking. The important thing to understand is that quitting, even after decades of use, can significantly reduce your chance of developing lung cancer. Each day, patients with lung cancer are surviving thanks to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care, and new treatment options are giving lung cancer survivors new hope. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, like the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for lung cancer, and patients enrolled in these trials are given access to medicines not yet approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, and you'll find more information at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm here with Dr. Fred Akuku, who is a resident in internal medicine and in Kampala, Uganda. Fred, I want to ask you a little bit about medical care in the villages of Uganda. What's you grew up in a small village. What was the care like?
Well, the care has since improved. There's been this attempt to build health centers in every county, in every village, and this has helped improve the care. The government has emphasis on the primary health care, and this targeting the three killer diseases. And this is malaria, is the biggest killer, and TB and HIV. And WHO report 2007 for Uganda indicates that cancer death in the last year were about 10,000. Now, probably this could be underreported because only 5% of our population seeks medical care.
And so the other 95% do what?
The 95% familiar with remedies, home remedies, you know, that people use. And then people also tend to use the herbalists more. Mm-hmm. There are many drugs sold by herbalists in the local market. And so people tend to go for those because they are cheap and easily accessible.
What are some of the reasons why people would not access the government's medical care or other medical care?
Yeah, I mentioned that the government has attempted, and we have four levels of health care in the rural setting. We have health center 1, 2, 3, and 4. At 4 is where we have an ambulance and we have a doctor. In the other health center levels, we have either what we call a medical assistant or a nurse. And so people have difficulty. These health centers are still very far away from most of the population. They cannot easily be accessible because of the infrastructure. And by and large, most of the population earns less than a dollar a day. And so people are very poor.
If someone needs cancer care, they're diagnosed, let's say, with a breast cancer, where do they go for that type of care?
You can't believe it, because there's only one cancer center in the whole country. And it's amazing because this cancer center also serves the neighboring countries like Rwanda. Mm-hmm. Rwanda does not have a cancer center. Burundi does not have a cancer center. And the whole of Eastern Congo does not have. So we see patients from Burundi, from Rwanda, from Eastern Congo, and from Southern Sudan. So it's a lot of patients coming over from all this region. And if you are 300 kilometers away from this cancer center, you have lots of trouble because you cannot access it easily. You do not have the money to come over because it's the only unit in the whole country. So imagine somebody who is 500 miles away coming over to Kampala, where this is located, and is sometimes very difficult.
Fred, I want to ask you a little bit about your journey. I know that in an attempt to grow the opportunities for caring for patients in your country, a number of physicians are coming to the United States and other places as well. And it's wonderful having you here. So I'm just going to ask you, what's it like to be in Connecticut and in the United States?
Well, there are two different worlds we're talking about here. Uganda is very different, and this is a very different world. And I had to adjust to many things, the weather and the people and the food and the healthcare system, many things were very different from what we see back home. Back home, we use the clinical skill to make a diagnosis. So when you look at a patient, you are looking for anemia, what we call pallor. Mm-hmm. You're looking for jaundice. And you look at the chest, see the chest movements, and make out a diagnosis. Many times the patient cannot afford the x-ray. And so you're using the clinical, your hands and eyes and sight to see and make a diagnosis and start the treatment. Here it's a different world. In 30 minutes, a patient is totally worked up and decision is made basing on what the patient, you know, what the results are showing. So it's very different. It takes 2 or 3 weeks to get results and things moving back home. And so that is amazing. And I think that this is what we call the internal medicine. I mean, looking at the inside of the person. What we see, do at home, we look at the outside and make a diagnosis of what is the inside of the person. But here, you look at the inside and the outside and make a decision. And I think that is very amazing.
You know, I'm just I'll share with you the other way around. What I saw when I came to visit Uganda is what an incredible physical exam the doctors in Uganda do, and the careful attention to detail, and really we have tremendous technology, but I think the clinical skills of that you have and your colleagues have is pretty amazing.
Yeah, we do rely, and there's a lot of emphasis on clinical skills. And I've interacted with many of the residents from Yale in this collaboration, a Yale Makerere University collaboration, who come over, and they really appreciate the exchange program and you know, the exposure that they get, you know, bedside exposure.
Well, let me ask you about that. So we'll ask it in both directions, but when our residents come to Uganda and spend time, what do they leave with and in terms of new skills? And I want to ask for you, too, what are some of the skills that you hope to bring home?
Well, your residents, when they come over to Uganda, they get exposed to these huge numbers of patients. Our ordinary admission on a day would be between 50 to 70 patients. And we have many patients on the floor because the beds are not enough. And you have people who are very sick. You have people with advanced disease, advanced immunosuppression, HIV. You have people with huge tumors. You have people with huge pleural effusions. And so your residents are usually amazed at, you know, how do you detect a pleural effusion? How do you detect a consolidation, those are patients, you can't find patients like those here in the U.S. because everyone comes to hospital early. But back home, it's a different story. And so you find patients with amazing clinical signs. And then you have EMF. That's one thing that many residents from Yale have never seen, an EMF case.
What's EMF?
EMF is endomyocardial fibrosis. Okay. This is a kind of an infiltrative disease that infiltrates the heart.
Yes.
And makes the heart smaller, the heart muscle so huge, and the patient becomes so thin. Mm-hmm. We describe it as a potato on a stick. They're so big up here, and the feet are so small.
Yeah.
And so it's like you're supporting a whole potato on a stick. So this is unique to Uganda because these cases cannot find them elsewhere. And this is one interesting thing.
So our residents leave having really learned some new ability to do a physical exam, to recognize diseases that they've never seen before. What are some of the skills that you hope to bring home?
Well, it's amazing, as I've mentioned, that the ability to look at the inside and the outside of a person is great, and it's the best way to take care of a patient. My clinical exam might be good, but I may miss something inside there. So one of the things is to try to improve our labs, and I know this will take long, but how do we integrate this into our system where we lack a good lab, we're not able to do the chest x-rays, we'd not have the MRIs, we can't do the CTs on everyone. So many times we are looking at what is the most important investigation in this patient. And this is one of the things that I am trying to learn. Amidst everything that I have seen here, what would be most appropriate in this case, in this particular patient, so that I don't have to spend so much.
Right. So in a sense, here we tend to do a lot of investigations, a lot of studies, and in a sense, what I think I'm hearing you say is that back home, you're going to need to focus on what are the one or two that you can do,
yeah,
and use them to the best of your ability.
Exactly.
Looking in general, I mean, are you faced with a big challenge when you go home and you'll eventually be one of the few oncologists in Uganda. Do you have a sense of optimism?
I'm hopeful. And what I'm doing is to improve my skill. There are lots of resources here, so lots of resourceful people trying to learn as much. And be helpful to my people, because back home, as you know, we have two oncologists and one of the oncologists is retired. So effectively, we have one oncologist for 30 million people in Uganda. And it's going to be a great opportunity when I get back. And my emphasis will be to try to do a healthy education, because this is important. My country cannot afford to treat people with cancers. It's too expensive. But can we have people? Can we catch the cancer early? Because as you know, the earlier you present with your cancer, the better the outcome. So can we catch these people early? Can we have people come early with resectable tumors? Mm-hmm. And also we hope to improve our health care. We cannot do just the basic, like the ER status, the PR status of some of the breast cancer tumors. And yet, tamoxifen, Arimidex, these are wonderful drugs that can be helpful to these patients. So can we also have such a skill taught to our pathologists? And then currently we have everyone being given tamoxifen, and I don't think that's fair because of the side effects.
So hopefully you'll be able to eventually bring some of the technology, some of the techniques back to Uganda. And also I hear, too, that what you're talking about in terms of earlier detection may make a world of difference. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit? I know that you're involved with working on a research project here while you're visiting. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, I'm involved in the looking at DCIS.
What is that?
Ductal carcinoma in situ. And this is a very early cancer of the breast, and looking at how it changes with treatment. And we look at women who come in with DCIS pre-chemotherapy and then after they've had the new adjuvant, and is there any change? And it's interesting to see that how the DCIS tumor, this very early type of cancer, changes with treatment. And I think it's a very exciting study.
Absolutely. I think it is also. And one of the projects I hope that we can work on together is when you return, perhaps look at some of the biology of breast cancer in women from Uganda.
We see younger women below 40, probably because of life expectancy. WHO is about 47 for women and about 45 for men. But we tend to see younger women, and it would be interesting to see whether there's any genomics behind this and look at the biology of this tumor. It would be very interesting, and compare that with the American population. It would be interesting.
I got one last question, and then we're getting. So, what was it like seeing snow for the first time?
Well, it was a different experience, and I've been battling with the cold, of course, having many jackets on me and having a lot of warm clothing. It's been very cold indeed.
Yeah. Fred, I want to thank you for joining us.
Oh, great.
On the program. And until next week, I want to wish all of you from the Yale Cancer Center to you. We want to send you our wishes for a safe and healthy week.
If you have questions, comments, or would like to subscribe to our podcast, go to yalecancercenter.org, where you'll also find transcripts of past broadcasts in written form. Next week, we'll learn about the treatment of brain tumors with neurosurgeon Dr. Joseph Piepmeier.